it's this big playground, and you know, playing on a playground by yourself is fun, but playing on a playground with your friends is more fun.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 216 for Thursday, March 25th, 2010. On today's show, we rant and rave about Just Cause 2, check out Mass Effect's new landing vehicle, mock a new service for lonely gamers, call out highlights on the new Warcraft patch, look at this year's BlizzCon, and more. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are Evan, I refuse to talk to anyone who's not playing Just Cause 2, Lottie.
All I'm saying, Dan, is if you haven't pulled a man out of a helicopter cockpit 30 or 50 feet off the ground with a grappling hook, you haven't lived.
Gary Whitta.
Hello.
Have you pulled a man out of a cockpit 30 or 50 feet off the ground, Gary?
No.
You're dead to Evan. Josh Augustine.
I also have not pulled a man out of a helicopter cockpit.
Dead.
Eric Belsas.
Not only have I pulled a man out of a cockpit, I then stole his helicopter.
Well done.
Uh-huh. That's an Evan approved action. And Andy Bauman.
I've done sort of a facsimile of that in Prototype where I like jumped on the helicopter cockpit and then tossed him out.
That's a good point. I mean, is that only applicable in Just Cause 2, or will pulling a guy out of a helicopter in Prototype or Mercenaries 2 get the job done for you?
Oh, it's just fine. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm more like a zombie state.
Well, then now that that's settled, Just Cause 2 did come out this week, and some of us have been in there wreaking havoc. I just got started last night, but I'm already really enjoying tying people to helicopters and watching them dangle and eventually die for some reason. I guess they die of fear, heart attack, right? Well, I mean, they also get like bumped into objects as the helicopter flies around. But yeah, tying things together in that game is really brilliant. It's kind of like Gary's Mod. Except, mm-hmm. You know, the world is alive and happening. So you have victims. It's Gary's Mod with victims. That's absolutely. How I would describe it.
Just to explain the plot of the game or the basics for it.
There's a plot?
Well, a plot to justify your chaos. Yeah, so you're basically some sort of American agent guy thing, and
super action stunt agent.
You're sent to this, I don't know, I was trying to decide at lunch if it's more like a Thai, like Thailand type island, or if it's more like Cuba.
It's Southeastern Asia
with It's a fictional island called Panao, and you're basically supposed to track down, you know, one of your buddies that may or may not have gone rogue. But really, I mean, the game is about you're a guy with a grappling hook and an infinite parachutes, meaning you can deploy a parachute at any time that you're in the air. And the grappling hook can attach anything, attach two things to each other, cars and people, cars and bridges, and helicopters and cars. It leads to a lot of interesting antics.
Now, is it me, by the way, or is the voice acting just awful?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
And people complain about, you know, call the voice acting in like Saboteur bad. That Saboteur's voice acting was, you know, over the top and cartoonish, but this is just bad.
Well, part of the problem is they try to create a fictional accent, I think, that's somewhere between, I don't know, I guess Thai and Italian or something.
I mean, Rico's accent is, voice work is terrible.
Right.
All the CIA buddies are terrible. Everybody is terrible that I've encountered in the first like hour of play. Eric, have you encountered that as well?
Yeah, it's, I think Evan puts it good. Like, it's like they tried to make up an accent. It's not really Asian. It's not really European. It's just kind of there. And it's odd because the vocal quality, like not even just the accent is pretty bad. It seems like the quality of their voice work is just kind of recorded in a bathroom or something. It's got an odd quality to it.
And I haven't heard enough to pick up on that, but I was just concentrating on just the bad acting. I think they were also going for kind of a cartoonish thing. I mean, the whole game is cartoonish. It's like every ridiculous action movie, like the stunt in the action movie that makes you kind of scoff and go like, okay, you know, they blew something up. All right, I'll go along with that, but it's preposterous. But like the whole game is that. So it's like they knew where the money was, you know, in that particular. That, you know, their approach. So the plot is kind of irrelevant. The voice acting is kind of irrelevant. They do have a very large, you know, push button to skip cutscene.
Yes.
flashing thing on the screen. So I think they don't expect a whole lot of people to care about the plot, but still, I mean, it's kind of laughably bad. Which, you know, it would be nice if it were there. Do you think it really detracts from a game like this to have, bad voice acting or no plot?
Not at all, because really 90% of my time so far has been absolutely just causing chaos in this world, which you're encouraged to do through a point system that is called chaos. Like, you get chaos points by blowing shit up. So you're actively just, I mean, that's what the game is. It's an open world game. You have these ridiculous tools. You can hijack helicopters. You can, with infinite missiles, you can surf on airliners and then hijack them while they're 10,000 feet in the air. You're not spending a lot of time worrying about the exposition. And I guess, to sort of transition off that, the engine is freaking incredible. It's beautiful. It's a gorgeous game. The environments transition from like these Arctic high peaked mountains into like deserty, locales. And, there's a lot of, I mean, most of it is pretty tropical, like beaches and palm trees and whatnot, but it's just a stunning game in terms of the lighting and how detailed everything is.
But, I'm kind of disappointed though that it doesn't have co-op or multiplayer of any kind.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's unfortunate.
It just seems it's this big playground, and you know, playing on a playground by yourself is fun, but playing on a playground with your friends is more fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's the developer's decision, probably partly because they wanted the game to look visually as well as it could. I don't know.
My guess is there's already people coding away, making mods to turn it into a multiplayer experience.
Yeah, and so somebody modded GTA 4 or GTA 3 multiplayer in there, so it can be done. But that's a pretty ambitious mod project, and unless the game is pretty open in terms of allowing mods, it may be impossible. It depends on what's hard coded and what's not.
That's fair. Yeah.
So it doesn't happen very often. I mean, that's one of the rare instances I've ever heard of anybody adding multiplayer to a game. Although there is one mod that we want to call attention to in this one. It's a multi-rope mod. So you can attach, like, normally you can only use one rope at a time, right, Evan?
Yeah.
And then this one lets you rope multiple things together.
Yep. It's called Bolo Patch. Just search Google for Bolo Patch, one word.
B-O-L-O-P-A-T-C.
Yes. It'll also let you, you know, add infinite ammo, and it also makes your rope, the tether you use to tie things together, stronger, so you can do a couple more things with that.
So you can, like, tie two jets together?
Yeah, basically, without it breaking.
Does it also give you a bolo necktie? Yeah.
but yeah, so it's really, I wonder how long it'll take to get old. How long do you think you'll play Just Cause before you'll, you know, kind of get tired of it?
So the thing I've been doing to make it, probably twice as awesome is I turned down all the music, and I went to Amazon and I picked up, let's see, some of the themes from Casino Royale and Top Gun. What's the one? The Danger Zone theme song.
I went to the Danger Zone.
That's the one. Misery Lou from Pulp Fiction. Some of the Star Trek soundtracks, some of the Dark Knight soundtrack. And I just play that while I play, and it's an awesome, like, action movie experience over and over and over again. Helicopter duels are incredible. Like you facing off against two helicopters, and just the feeling of dodging things, just barely getting by a missile and having that whiz through your rotors and not getting shot down. Free falling is an awesome feeling, and just like acrobatically transitioning into a parachute, pulling your, like, it's just such a, I mean, Grand Theft Auto, while it's certainly a game that you can cause havoc and do some interesting things with, and it's a playground in a certain way, having a constant mechanic where you can just pull yourself to any point, you know, up to probably 50, 60 meters away and elevate yourself. It's fantastic because you can navigate the world that much more easily.
Yeah. And one thing about GTA that kind of disappoints me is when I'm in a you know, meticulously modeled world like that where it's this playground, I want to be able to do stuff that I could, you know, that I want to be able to do impossible things. I want some kind of superpower, you know. In GTA, I mean, you can turn on all the cheats and you can, you know, maybe run a little bit faster than normal and you've got all this ammo and you're invincible, but you still can't, like, you know, leap over a building in a single bound, you know, and that's the kind of thing that after a little while you want to be able to play around with. And GTA doesn't really let you do that. There are a few mods and stuff that will do it, but this one has, like, kind of some ridiculous abilities built in. Just from, you know, right out of the box.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the game itself is basically an anecdote machine. Those are arguably some of my favorite games. I'm trying to think of the most interesting that happened. Probably, I sat my girlfriend down to play it just for like 10 minutes, and she picked it up really quickly. And she found her way to an airfield, and we saw this airliner. We're like, okay, let's do something with that. It's this giant, you know, 747 type looking plane, and it's taking off. When we grapple to it. And we hit, there's something called a stunt jump, which basically sort of magnetizes you to any car that you're nearby or any vehicle. But it doesn't put you in it. It puts you on top of it, like the hood. So we're just riding the roof of this airliner as it takes off, get in the air, and we hit the E key and automatically just hijack it. And then, I had read online like a day earlier that, there's an island in the game that's sort of a homage to Lost.
Right.
So you fly toward this island.
I must play this game.
Not that it's too much of a spoiler, but you fly toward it, and like your visibility just decreases, like very subtly. The sky becomes kind of dark and purple. There's lightning, and then your plane just kind of explodes over the island, and you have to get off it. And it's very challenging to get off. And it's a nice playground. It's I mean, ultimately, it's the amazing lighting and the night and day cycle, the fantastic explosion effects that are going to keep me in that game. I am a little worried that there aren't as many, as much sort of like tools and pieces in place to create as many emergent moments as I'd like. I mean, there's really like one enemy type. There's not too big of a variety of like, land vehicles, for example. Like there's a couple tank type things, but, most of your stuff is happening with the parachute and grappling people and grappling thing, like grappling people to like propane tanks, and you put a bullet in the propane tank and it, sort of rockets into the air and pulls them into the air. So mostly I'll be watching the machinima, I think, too.
Now, guys who haven't played this, are you sold on the concept, or are you interested in playing it?
Yeah, I'm interested to check it out. It's something that I don't think I'll play for maybe more than just like a week, because it is kind of thing that I will get in there, I will have fun, you know, jumping from helicopter to helicopter and like surfing airplanes and hijacking and attaching people to all manner of different objects. And then I'll just kind of get bored with it and probably move on. I won't really bother playing the game. I'll just kind of run in there and do stuff till I get bored.
What about you, Gary?
I never played the original, but I heard good things about it. I really liked the see, here's the problem, is you're telling me the storyline's not very good. I actually liked the setting of the game. One of the things I thought was most interesting was taking that kind of, you know, by now very tried and tested GTA open world, you know, combination of vehicles and running around and adventure type gameplay, and putting it into what I thought was a really original setting for a game, which was that whole kind of island dictatorship freedom fighter type scenario. I thought it was really interesting. But, you know, for that to work for me, I would want the storyline of that to be good. And if you're telling me it's not very good, then maybe the part of it that I find most interesting is not as interesting as I hoped it would be.
Yeah, I think you would be let down in that particular area of the game. Although another area that people might be let down about, particularly people that are still playing on or gaming on Windows XP, is that they can't play it because
back that truck up a second.
Yeah, this game requires DirectX 10, which means you need Vista or Windows 7 to play it.
Oh, monkey. Really?
Yeah.
That's the best swear I've ever heard.
Make sure you bleep that out, Andy.
I was like,
what percentage of gamers do you think are still on XP at this point? Do you think 40%? It's still the majority of people?
40%.
I think it probably is. I'd say anywhere between like 45 to 65%.
Huh.
And the reason why is because Microsoft basically screwed an entire generation of the OS, right? Where a lot of people weren't gonna upgrade, and you know, people now will start doing it with Windows 7 because I guess, you know, it's getting out there that Windows 7 is good and not like Vista was, but they basically wasted or squandered a whole generation of OS where people just, you know, anyone who knew what they were doing decided to stick with XP because it was just the smarter thing to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did not know what I was doing. But I guess now that there have been two service packs for Vista, it's gotten to the point where it's pretty good.
For Vista, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've been using Vista. I enjoy it. It doesn't bother me too much. It is kind of annoying with the warnings popping up all the time, but I mean, you can disable that, it's not a big deal.
I don't play games on my Vista because it's on a notebook. But wait, are you guys telling me that I'm the only one that's still with XP here on my main gaming computer?
Why are you still on XP?
Good question. I have a copy of Windows 7 sitting here. I just haven't done the thorough upgrades because I have, like, it's like a propensity of I have lots of unfinished projects that I don't want to screw up or have the chance of screwing up by leveling the OS and going in with a fresh install. And
what do you mean? You have projects on programs that you worry won't be compatible?
Exactly. Or I'm worried that somehow in the translation I'll lose information.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you should have that backed up anyway.
Well, it is, but what if it doesn't work in Windows 7?
XP mode.
Yeah. Yeah, there is an XP mode that's like kind of emulation, but I mean, what kind of software are you worried about?
Yeah, my video editing stuff mostly.
Yeah, I mean that shouldn't be too hard to find.
You know,
out.
You've got to ask yourself. You always got to do like kind of a pros and cons. One of the problems that I have is that I'm a complete whore for upgrading things. Like anytime it says you can upgrade this or there's a new version available, I just instantly want to do it. And I've made this mistake before where I upgraded to Vista just because, well, it's the new thing and it must be better, right? Well, if Microsoft has taught us anything, it's that's often not the case. And, you know, I would, you know, there was nothing wrong with XP. It was working perfectly well for me. I was very happy with it. It did everything I wanted it to do. My computer was completely functional. But I would upgrade just out of a sense of, oh, this is the new hotness. This is the shiny new thing. But in reality, I didn't really need, you know, preview view or whatever, all of the shiny widgets didn't really add a lot of benefit to me. And it actually broke a lot of stuff that I needed. So, you know, in a lot of senses, it was a downgrade. So I think that it's actually smarter to stick with the stuff that you know works, because often what you're gaining is quite sadly outweighed by the stuff that will break.
Well, Gary, I made the exact same mistake you did. I'm like, ooh, shiny. I'm gonna get that. And then regretted it. But going to Windows 7, at least there is a strong incentive in that you get to go to 64-bit and have it actually be supported. I mean, XP has 64-bit, but there are no drivers for anything. Whereas 7 64-bit, there are plenty of drivers.
So I actually I'm glad you brought this up because I was going to ask you this question. I finally got a copy of Windows 7, and I'm going to install it on my iMac here and do a dual boot. I should install the 64-bit version, right? I mean, is there any reason to install the 32-bit version?
No. No reason whatsoever.
I just found the latest Steam hardware surveys, and according to it, 43.53% of its users are not DirectX 10 compatible.
Okay, well, I mean, that's on the low end of what I thought it would be. So
yeah,
that's encouraging. Although, I mean, who's to say exactly how much visual benefit you're going to get in like Just Cause or anything with DirectX 10? I mean, a lot of the benefits that you know are touted, I honestly don't notice very much. Have you guys noticed any like, ooh, that's DirectX 10?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's really, at least in Just Cause's case, it's the quality of the engine that's so apparent. There are a lot of nice customization options in the graphical settings there as well. So I don't know, but if you're telling me to tell the difference between a DX9 movie or screenshot and a DX10 one, then I probably couldn't.
Right.
So
I mean, DirectX 10 in of itself is not a huge selling point for me. And I think it is very unfortunate in Just Cause's case that they decided to go that route, because they are, you know, cutting out, well, right there, 43% of their potential sales just on Steam. And I guess it does use Steam for its DRM. So I mean that is their market right there, and they just killed 43% of it.
So does it take a lot of developer effort to make it backwards compatible for 9 as well, or why would you not?
It's difficult to say. I mean, we aren't developers, so it's very hard for us to say.
It's got to work on 9 because those are the same. I believe those are the same APIs they have for the Xbox 360.
Right. I mean, the consoles can't do DirectX 10, so right. they must have added that as like a, you know, premium PC feature. But yeah, it must have been work for them to transition from 9 to 10. So probably not the best use of their resources, really.
They just shadow run Just Cause 2. How dare they?
It's not quite as bad as that, because I mean,
I know, cause it's way longer into the life cycle,
yeah,
et cetera.
Right, and you know, 60% of people do have that.
So. Yeah, and there's a decent OS with DirectX 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I feel so noobish right now. Gosh.
Well, you actually have it. It's just that you're lazy.
That's true. That's part of it.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure. I mean, if you just Google your software to see if it's, you know, Windows 7 compatible, I'm sure somebody's there. Countless forum threads on just about every program.
Yeah.
And if it's incompatible, you'll know right away. And yeah, back up your stuff.
Oh, it's back.
So moving on a little bit, Mass Effect 2 just launched a new piece of free DLC this week that adds something that a lot of people thought, or not a lot, but some people thought was missing from Mass Effect 2 relative to Mass Effect 1, which is a landing vehicle. Mass Effect 1 had the Mako, which was the really difficult to control, landing vehicle. It was like a little ATV style thing that cruised around planets that didn't have anything on them. And you know, the general consensus was that it was kind of superfluous. It didn't serve a good purpose for the game to have that thing in there where you can land on any planet, but there was nothing to do there. So
there were a couple of decent action based levels and sequences based around that Mako, but I think you're right. For the most part, I'm glad that they dropped it. I think they were clearly, you know, looking at what didn't work in the first game, and the Mako was like at the top of the list of things that, all in all, you know, you're better off without. And having played Mass Effect 2 through to the end now, I certainly did not miss it at all.
Right. So, but now they've added back in a version of a landing vehicle. This one's actually kind of a hovercraft, though it looks like it controls very similarly to the Mako. It's called the Hammerhead, and it doesn't look like they've added. I actually haven't tried it yet because my copy of Mass Effect 2 is like the pre-release review copy, which doesn't have access to the DLC, which is really annoying. I gotta get a retail box. It looks like they've just added like specific missions that you go on using this that are more action oriented, like the ones that you were just talking about, I guess.
And this is so free.
It is free.
I got to check this out.
Yes,
it's perfect.
Do.
It's like they were watching me play, because like right as I finished it this weekend, right as I finished the main game, and I'm going, oh, I guess I could go around and like clean up some of the side missions I didn't do, but that's not that interesting now that the story's done. I guess I could go back and play it all through again with, you know, kind of a pumped up Shepard, you know, because you can start again with all the stats. Mm-hmm. But like neither of those things were that exciting to me. So the DLC has arrived at the perfect time.
Right. And also they have announced, it's not available yet, but there will be a new piece of DLC, that it's going to add a new companion who's like a super thief. It will be a $7, add-on that adds this new character and a new loyalty mission. Do you guys think that at $7, based on the existing Mass Effect 2, loyalty missions, do you think $7 is a good price for that?
Twice as much as it should be.
Yeah, it's a little cheap. I agree.
If you extrapolate it out, if you look at what you pay for the game itself, you pay what, $50-$60 for God knows how many hours of gameplay. One thing that I will certainly say about BioWare and this game in particular was, having finished it, I was going back and thinking of all the things that I did in the game and thinking, holy shit, this game was huge to do. And there was, I would almost suggest that there was so much value for money in that game that I almost got like way more than I paid for, that I almost don't mind paying $7 for a little bit extra, because I feel like I'm still ahead of the curve. Do you know what I mean?
It's right.
It was a pretty amazing, you know, and I'm one of these guys that says, you know, games don't have to be long. You know, I'm one of those people that will defend games like Portal and Braid and say, well, look, they weren't that long, but you know, they were so entertaining for the time that you spent with it. Who cares that it was you know, 20 hours rather than 40 hours or whatever, because a lot of these games, when they go to 40, 50 hours, are just filler. But the amazing thing that BioWare does is they create a game that's like 40 or 50 hours, and there's no filler. It's pretty amazing.
Do you know how many hours it took you to finish?
Jeez, you know, I actually kind of wish that they had a timer for that, because it's hard.
They do,
you know,
don't they?
Oh, I don't know. Do they?
It tells you at the end.
Oh, okay. Well, I should go check that out, because I'd be interested to know. All I know is that, you know, it's one of those games that when I sit down and play, I really play. You know, you don't just sit down and play that game for 30 minutes. You know, you find yourself looking at your watch and it's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and you want to just do one more mission. And I think I did, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 sessions like that. So, and I play through pretty slow, and I take my time to explore and stuff, but I guess there is some filler, you know, the mining for minerals and things like that, which I believe they've said is going to be gone. I think the mining for minerals.
Thank goodness.
That I think is like the Mako of Mass Effect 2 now, where they've looked at it and said that's not a lot of fun for players, you know, kind of going over planets with your little Roomba looking for minerals is really kind of laborious. And
you just hurt Eric's feelings, and I bet there's some tears welling up right now.
I'm not even sure I can talk anymore.
How many hours did you spend mining, Eric?
I think all in all, it came to about 23.
You have to admit that is filler. That's not fun. Right?
It's absolutely filler. I just did it because I'm a completionist.
And so I think they were saying that they were going to get rid of that and come up with a new new mechanic for obtaining minerals and resources in the next game. But, you know, if you take that out of it, I don't know. I think it was a good 30 or so hours that I spent. I didn't even do everything. I didn't do a lot of the side quests, because I just, you know, sometimes you have fun doing that, but other times you just want to get on with the main story. But I think I got just about everyone, and I did Zaid, and I did all the loyalty missions. And it's always annoying though, because you feel like you never quite complete the game perfectly. You know, I didn't get, you know, a couple of my, let me ask you this. You know, when there's kind of a cinematic and the ship is crashing, I don't know, I don't want to spoil this for too many people, but I lost a couple of people just in the cinematic. And I'm wondering if that can be avoided if I had spent more time upgrading the armor.
Absolutely. It can.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. It is possible to get through without losing a single person.
Okay.
And actually in our upcoming issue, we have a guide telling you how to do just that.
Well, I mean, there were clearly so many ship upgrades that I could have got if I'd have spent more time, you know, laboriously hoovering every planet in the galaxy.
Hey, that Ezo does not come easy. You got to work for that.
No, Element Zero is a bitch to find.
Yeah, you guys are expecting to just give you the Ezo?
It's not that fun. I'm not willing to sit there gold farming for minerals. And in the end, the two people that I lost were like, were two characters that were not that interesting to me. So I didn't really care that I lost them. Who did I lose? I think I lost the Drell guy, the one who looks Thane. Like the guy from Enemy Mine.
Oh, Thane. Ugh.
I lost Thane, and I lost...
You guys are such haters.
I like Thane.
I lost Jack, who was my least favorite character in the whole thing, so I didn't care about losing those two.
Those are the two that I lost on my first go as well, but I didn't lose them going in.
I lost Grunt, and I cried for days.
Oh, who cares about Grunt? I would have been bummed to lose Legion, because I think he's a really cool character. Yeah.
Yes.
On my second playthrough, I lost Garrus, and I was really pissed off.
Oh,
how many different romantic hookups can you get into? Because I only did one, and I remember in Mass Effect 1 there were more options, and it didn't seem like there were many options in this one.
There are at least 5.
Oh, really?
Right across different genders.
Yeah, 5 total, but the DLC is adding more, is what they've said.
Okay. I don't really know who I would have hooked up with. I mean, Miranda's the obvious one, right? But beyond that, like, what options were there, really?
Wait, there are actually 6 main ones, then kind of side love interests. I just looked this up. If you're male, you can do Miranda, Jack, or Tally Zora. I don't know how that works out, since she can't.
And by do, you mean?
Really? Isn't she always inside her
bias? Yeah, there's something where, like, drinks down immunization stuff for like 2 days, and then she's like able to come out for like a few minutes or something.
Wow. That's
and then,
love.
Yeah, Jacob, Thane, and Garrus. And then alternatively, one of the Asaris, I guess, can count as romances, even though you don't actually do anything, but it'll mess up your romance from the first game.
Oh, so it's like second base?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kelly Chambers.
I heard that you can get it on with Morinth, but you don't survive. You need to die.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You can do it after the final mission.
Oh, yeah, when I did the Morinth one, I didn't have enough Paragon stroke renegade to resist her seduction. But nice. Fortunately, the other one came in and saved me. But I was doing really well up until the last minute, and then I didn't have enough points to resist.
But it did, Gary.
Yeah. But in any case, $7 too much for some of you, just right for Gary.
Well, does that $7 include a sexual encounter, casual encounter?
It might. I guess the point I was making was that, if you look at how many hours you get for the main game, $7 for a couple of hours doesn't really seem like it adds up. But again, I think that you got so much more value than you could reasonably expect in the first game that it doesn't bother me that much.
So, Gary, you feel you owe BioWare?
I feel like if they called me up right now and said, you know, we think you probably should give us an extra $10, I probably wouldn't complain too much. Because so many games do shortchange, you know, either because they are just too short or because, you know, they're plenty long, but a lot of the stuff you're doing is just not fun and the playtime is kind of inflated. BioWare is one of the few companies that you just know, you know, which ever since Knights of the Old Republic through Mass Effect and Dragon Age and now, you know, back to Mass Effect, you always know that you're going to get just so much value for your money.
Well, you know, Andy, if you do want, you know, to spend $7 on 10 minutes of sexy time.
I know where this is going.
There are some people that can hook you up.
Is there?
there's a new laughable site announced this week called Game Crush, which for $6.60, starting at $6.60, for 10 minutes, a girl will play a game with you. It seems to be only available on the Xbox at this point.
So,
no, it's browser too.
Oh, that's right. There are some browser-based games. But Evan, what?
Oh, I mean, compared to comparable services, that's not too bad, right?
No, it's not bad.
What would be a comparable service to that?
Well, you know, like $2.99 a minute or something, right?
Yeah.
Minimum of 10 minutes. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I just want to read this chat script from a screenshot that they have on their website, where it's a picture of a cheesy, like, 90s style battleship game, back and forth, and oh no, one of her ships got hit, and she's like laughing at you. So the chat goes like this, this is you, you sank my battleship, and she says, yeah I did, great shot, and then you say, going for another, and then she says, not again, lol, and then you go, I'm going for the win. And you just paid $10.
I read a review on one of the gaming websites that you know, checked out a kind of a beta version of it, I guess. And they said they were kind of bummed out because they were playing with a girl, and the whole vibe was kind of spoiled by the fact that the girl's boyfriend was clearly like lurking around in the background and chatting with her. Kind of spoiled the atmosphere a little bit.
Now you see her on the webcam. Is it like a webcam to webcam thing, or are you just like a peeping Tom watching her?
That's a good question.
It's probably up to you, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Okay.
It's weird. I mean, am I remembering correctly, like, you can choose whether or not you want the person you're talking to, and I feel terrible saying this, to be flirty or dirty?
Yes, those are the two options.
Like, we've had like a couple days long debate on, like, what's the distinction between those personalities. I don't know.
And who are you having that debate with?
Logan, of course.
Oh, okay.
See, I'm thinking like with dirty, because these games are like pool, which revolves around a long wooden stick and a bunch of balls, right, and battleship, which come in a nice phallic symbol. Like maybe dirty, there's a lot more innuendo going on about the actions they're taking in the game. That's about the best I came up with.
Bad. The sad thing about this is just reinforces the, you know, gamer as sad, lonely, stateless, loser stereotype, which, you know, we don't need.
Yeah, gamers are quite capable of reinforcing that on their own. They don't need
exactly
any websites to help them.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's no need for this. Can you think of anything, I mean, other than the comparable services that Evan mentioned, any other comparable services for any other anything?
There's definitely I don't know of like a website, but I know some gaming clans do like training sessions for StarCraft or Counter-Strike. Will pay for a time slot and they'll sort of teach you the basics of how to be a good sniper, how to win on this map, whatever.
But that's not the same thing as this, though, is it? This is more of a social aspect of. It is kind of creepy, and I can't quite figure out what it's meant to be. Like, it's not really a dating site because clearly the women are being paid and you're paying. So it's almost more like a phone sex line or something.
But exactly.
It's just there's something that kind of makes your skin crawl about it, and you've got to wonder that even if you're sad enough to like want to give it a try, that. You know, you've got, even if you're even marginally self-aware, at some point, you know, your inner voice is going to be going, dude, you've hit bottom. You know, this,
you've crossed the line. You've crossed the line into self-parody at that point.
You're playing off-brand Battleship with like a 24-year-old random girl from Louisiana. Yeah, you've sunk.
Well, you may have sunk her Battleship, but you have sunk your entire life.
There you go.
And she's probably letting you win, but but at least it's creating employment opportunities, huh?
Yes.
In this economy.
So moving on, Josh has been sitting over there very patiently waiting to tell us about the new WoW patch, which just launched and added some new features.
Why, yes, I have. It just went live on Tuesday. And the biggest excitement of it is it added the random battleground tool, which similar to kind of the random dungeon tool, which you can just queue up and it puts you in a random battleground. And then it gives you rewards just for completing it. If you win, you get a lot more honor. If you lose, you still get like a lot of bonus honor. So just to give you an idea, before a battleground, maybe it would take maybe 20 minutes, you know, you could get maybe 2,000 honor if you're doing pretty good. Now, if you win, you're getting 6,000 to 7,000. And if you lose, you're still getting 2,000 to 3,000. So, I mean, it just makes getting geared up once you hit 80 a lot easier, which is fantastic.
Do you think it was too hard before?
It wasn't too hard. It's just too time consuming. Because it's just grinding it out pretty much. And so this just reduces the grind to like 30% of what it was before.
Penny Arcade did a comic about this a little while ago about how there's a certain amount of resentment from longer term players that, you know, the longer you play, the harder it really is for you, in the, you know, for people that played from the very beginning, you know, they had to do everything the hard way. You know, mounts, you know, came only at level 60. Now you can get them at what, level 20? And it's kind of like, you know, you're a loyal subscriber to the game, but because it's in the interest of Blizzard to continually kind of lower the bar and get more and more people interested and to respond to people that may say, you know, it's always too difficult, that I guess there's a certain amount of resentment for people that, you know, kind of had to do it the hard way. And now, you know, these newer players are coming in and getting and being able to progress to the same level much more quickly.
Whippersnappers, I believe, is the technical term.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. The old timers that kind of complain about that, I mean, I think they like to complain about it. I don't think they're really upset about it. They just like to kind of boast like, oh, yeah, well, you got that. Well, I did it the hard way back when
in my day. Stuff. Yeah, you kids don't know you're born. Yeah, I guess so. You know, there's a certain amount of honor in saying that we have to do everything the more difficult way. But when is this new patch out, or did it just come out, or is it coming out?
Yeah, it just came out on Tuesday. So
I'm interested because I'm actually finally getting back into it now. I know I've been away for a while, but I'm finally going to jump back in. I reconnected with one of my old guild buddies who's going to help power level me up the last couple of levels to 80 so I can finally start getting some real armor and trying to get back into the groove in time for Cataclysm. I know that's still a way off, but I'm trying to get back in. Although this was the same problem that I fell in to with Lich King, where I started really playing a lot because I had not played for a while, and anytime a new expansion's on the horizon, I'm like, ooh, gotta get back into it. You know, that's how they suck everyone back in every year or so. And I was like running around trying to get the best armor. And of course you realize that as soon as the new expansion comes out, all the best armor is kind of instantly, you know, ruined.
Obsolete.
Because, you know, everything new in the new game, suddenly all the greens are better than the purples that you are killing yourself to get. So like, why even bother?
Yeah, it's funny. I've had like 3 friends who stopped playing WoW come back just for this patch, just because I think Blizzard knows they're kind of hitting a tough spot where it's kind of weird, where, you know, people that are geared out don't want to play because they feel like they're wasting their time before Cataclysm. People that haven't played want to jump back in. So they've been making a lot of changes like this that make it really easy for people who want to come back and get gear, get it really
well. It sounds like that dungeon finder was the best thing they did in a long time.
Yeah, it may be the best change to the game ever. It is fantastic.
Because that was a big frustration for me. You know, a lot of as you get into the higher levels, you really want to, you know, you want to spend more and more time in dungeons, and those meeting stones didn't really work, and you know, LFG, you know, it doesn't really, you know, you can spend a lot of time just sitting around waiting for an opportunity to get into a dungeon, and so you know, there's a lot less downtime. I wonder actually if it creates a little bit of a rod for Blizzard's own back though, because you know, they already have an issue with the hardcore players, you know, hitting the top end of the content, and Blizzard constantly having to kind of stay one step ahead of them and giving them new things to challenge them before they've done everything there is to do. And if they make it easier to progress and to hit dungeons more and more quickly with less downtime, I wonder if that makes it even more difficult for Blizzard to stay ahead of the top players.
Yeah, I was talking with them, actually. I talked with Tom Chilton and Jayon Breck at GDC, and I was kind of talking with them if they were kind of happy with how many people are seeing the end game and how quickly they're getting there, and they were really happy. They said, for the first time ever, they're having about 50% of the people doing end game raiding, and they really like that. So I don't think they're too worried about that top end getting bored, because there's always the heroic modes, the achievements. They put all this stuff out there that the average player doesn't really care about, to kind of keep those guys entertained, and they just want to get everybody as much as possible in there to go see the Lich King and see all that stuff.
Hey Josh, can you start referring to people like the rest of us as normals?
Yes.
Yeah. But speaking of places that normals probably won't go, there is a new announcement for BlizzCon 2010 that will be October 22nd and 23rd in Anaheim, California. Now, isn't that a little bit later than usual in the year?
No, they've done it. They've done it around that time before. They've had a few in October.
Yeah, I think it's usually September or October.
Okay, I was wondering if it had anything to do with maybe they're coordinating for StarCraft II's launch, but I mean, because we still don't know when that's going to be.
There's a couple of BlizzCons that I've been to that were in October, so it's not unprecedented. I wonder what the big announcement would be at this point. I guess there isn't anything new. Like everything is kind of out of the bag in terms of we know what the next products are. It's just
have they announced the last Diablo 3 class yet, Evan?
No. They have not. There's supposed to be a fifth one.
Yeah, there you have it.
Yeah, right now it's Monk, Wizard, Witch Doctor, and Barbarian. We're sort of speculating here that they're missing either a Sword and Shield guy or a rogue-like character. So
yeah,
maybe they'll have some Cataclysm hands-on as well. I don't think they had that last time, did they? But it would have been too early.
Right. Yeah, if Cataclysm isn't out by then, definitely. I think if it is out, they'll kind of be talking about maybe like the first raid dungeon they'll be adding to it. And what about like the next StarCraft 2, like the Zerg campaign or anything?
Nah, I think that would be too soon. Yeah, but it actually depends on when they end up launching. If they launched it like tomorrow, then yeah. If not,
awesome.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to launch it tomorrow, incidentally. So they'll almost certainly have Diablo 3, you know, playable there, considering they had it playable last year. They'll have StarCraft 2 there in one form or another. It'll either be, you know, like just before launch or after launch. Maybe they'll have tournaments. They'll probably have something for Cataclysm. Is there anything else you're expecting to see? And do you think it's worth $100+ to go?
Yes, it is absolutely worth $100+ for somebody that doesn't have to travel super far. I don't know if you had to add in travel and hotel and stuff, but I live close enough to drive with my family. And it's totally worth it just to be there with that many people that are so excited about WoW that they will stand in hours to do fake quests inside the floor where it's like, go talk to this guy and pick up this. Okay, now go to this guy and talk and pick up this. And once you collect all 8 of them, you get like a little sticker. Like people were doing this for hours. And it's just, it's so fun to be in that atmosphere where you can make any sort of World of Warcraft reference and everybody gets it and everyone just knows. Whereas here, like, I make it and, like, Evan may give me, like, a slight dirty look, like, oh, the Warcraft speak again.
I do. But,
yeah, I've been to a few BlizzCons, and I would say that it's not really worth it for casuals, but then if you're a casual, you're probably not going to get a ticket anyway. This really is like a shrine for the true diehards. And it's really interesting to go because, you know, everyone's aware of the fact that Blizzard's an incredibly popular brand and Warcraft in particular, you know, 12 million players worldwide, whatever. It's huge. But like you think of that just kind of in the abstract. And then when you actually go to BlizzCon and you see, you know, tens of thousands of people packed into these halls and standing in line for hours and hours just to get like an exclusive Murloc coffee mug or whatever. Like, I mean, these things are genuinely highly prized and, you know, you got to stand in line for hours to play any of the games and, you know, the hall is just packed out. You really do get a sense for, not just the scale of it, but the level of devotion that these games have inspired in people. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I will say that the point during the concert when they had everyone shout out, like, for the Horde, like, it shook my body. It was so powerful. It was like I was actually in a Horde army. It was incredible. And then they had for the Alliance, and, like, a couple kids were like, yay, for the Alliance, and it's just depressing.
So I guess if you're still chomping at the bit for Diablo 3 at this point, you know, it's still a ways off, but for this weekend, Torchlight is $5 on Steam. And yeah, that's less than the price of Mass Effect DLC. So and less than the price of 10 minutes of playing Battleship with a girl.
It's kind of the last gasp of all the competing roguelikes before Diablo 3 comes out, right? You got to make hay now before Diablo 3 comes out, because no one's going to be playing those other games after that.
Well, this game is just have you played it, Gaz? Have you played Torchlight?
No, I'm really not into roguelikes. I tried Titan Quest. I looked at Torchlight. They're not for me. Like, I will play Diablo 3 because, you know, it's obviously kind of the Mac Daddy of that whole genre, and you know, Blizzard does everything a little bit better than anyone else. But for the most part, those kind of games don't hold a lot of appeal for me.
I think you got to give it a shot. I mean, there is a free demo, but I mean, it's hard to find somewhere you can get, you know, more enjoyment for $5 than that. Although for free this weekend, you can jump into Champions Online. They're doing another free weekend to show off the level 37 to 40 content they just launched, which I guess was a big sticking point with a lot of people, was that there was not enough content for high level players in that game. So if you left, like, because there wasn't any content at that high level, your account is being turned back on. You can jump back in and try it for free, which is nice. Or if you're just looking for something new to try this weekend, it's hard to go wrong with a free game for a weekend. Although it's a hefty download. You can start downloading it now, but it doesn't start until tomorrow. So if you're bored this weekend, I guess the last bit of news on our slate is that The Witcher 2 was finally formally announced, which we all knew was coming, but there is a trailer out there showing some impressive videos, NPCs that are aware of your actions, a new dialogue system, and absolutely terrible voice acting. It's worse than Just Cause.
It's a great trailer. I mean, my immediate impression as somebody that hasn't played, I've played maybe the first level of the first Witcher, is, wow, this reminds me of Dragon Age, except it looks three times better.
Well, Dragon Age reminded me of The Witcher, to be fair.
for me, I guess the big news is that I now have a deadline by which to play the first game.
Yeah.
So I gotta play the first one so I can play the second one. Because, you know, these games, I've said numerous times on this podcast, it's been on my to-play list, and I've just never gotten around to it. But now I have a driving motivation to actually get around to it. So, and Eric, was it you that's played a lot of The Witcher?
Yeah, I played through it once actually in the original Russian and once through in English.
Oh, nice.
Nerd. Is the voice acting better in Russian?
Oh, far better. Okay. Because it's, you know, Russian people doing it.
Right. So you're excited for The Witcher 2 then?
Oh, definitely. It's a really cool world they've created where, you know, Dragon Age was, there was dark moments, but there was also some light humor and stuff. The Witcher is, it's dark, it's gritty. You've got a cool, like, magic system in their world. And it's also got that sort of, like, one-to-one control where you're actually swinging and hacking and slashing at monsters. It's going to be good to be back in that world, yeah.
All right, well, we'll be taking a look at it soon enough. In the meantime, let's move on to some questions.
Hey guys, this is Steve from Charleston, North Virginia, and I'm just wondering why nobody talks Battlefield Bad Company 2. It's like you have built-in voice comms, but nobody uses them. It's so aggravating. Let me know what you guys think.
What do you think that is? I did notice that when I was playing, that nobody seemed to be using the voice chat.
Agreed.
Yeah, I wish I had done some more research on this, but I heard that the system actually doesn't work for a lot of people for some reason. I don't know if it's because it's specific to your squad. I don't know if there's a global system, but I'm really not sure. I think part of it is a lot of people playing are using external services like Skype and Ventrilo to communicate with friends that they've joined a game with. So I don't know. I want to say DICE fixed any issue they might have had with it. Maybe there's just that perception out there still that it doesn't work, so people aren't trying.
The only communications that have come through have not been listenable, discernible.
Audible.
Audible. So for me, that hasn't worked at all. So
maybe you're just playing with a bunch of drunk people.
Well, maybe. I'm a really bad offender. Because I remember in Battlefield 2, there were squads that would say, like, you have to have a mic. Like, mics only, please. And I'm one of those people that doesn't necessarily play with a microphone on all the time, so I don't know.
Well, my excuse that my mic was that my mic was broken when I was playing, so.
But yeah, I think it's only within your squad, actually, now that I'm remembering a little bit.
Yeah, you can only hear squad chat.
Yeah. So up to four other people, I guess. Mm-hmm. So if those four people aren't communicating to three people aren't communicating to you, then yeah.
But you're much less effective when you're not talking in those games.
Yeah. Well, if we want to plug a little here, we just got our own vent server if you're playing on our servers.
Plug, plug, plug.
Yeah, let me pull up the IP for that. It's 208.140.19 port 3796 if you want to hop in there. Feel free to use it. We've got like 300 slots, so go crazy. Bring your friends in there and play TF2, whatever. And yeah, hang out.
Hey, this is a question coming from Taylor in Dallas, Texas. Great podcast, guys. I was just had a question about MMOs. I've noticed that there are a lot of free-to-play MMOs coming out that seem to be based off of microtransactions. And I was wondering, do you guys think that the trend will continue like this and we'll see standard subscription-based MMOs starting to be phased out of the market? Thanks, guys, again, and love the podcast.
That sounds like a Josh question if I ever heard one.
It's like it was made just for me. Well, let's see. Yes, there are a lot more free-to-play games coming out. I don't think subscription will ever completely go away, it'll get a lot smaller relatively, because free-to-play games for a long time had this stigma where it's like, if it's free-to-play, you just assumed it was a crappy game. And for the most part, that was true for a very long time. A lot more games are coming out now, like recently Allods Online. I'm a big fan of Dungeons & Dragons Online just went free-to-play, and it's a pretty quality game. So a lot of games are coming out free-to-play that actually have good quality. It's just a different business model, and more people are becoming open to the idea of, you know, hey, maybe I don't want to pay $50 just to find out if this game is right for me.
Yeah.
It's definitely a business model that took some time, but I think it's finally coming into its own. I would not be surprised if 2 years from now, the majority of the popular MMOs are free to play.
That soon?
Yeah.
Really? Because the Old Republic is definitely going to be subscription. And I think that and WoW will probably be the two biggest.
They've talked a lot about microtransactions with Tor. Do you know for sure that it's going to be subscription? They've said that they were thinking about doing microtransactions. They didn't say in addition to subscription or in place of. But
I would have to look it up. But I'm fairly certain it's going to be have a subscription.
Yeah. When I was at BioWare, this was about a year ago. So hey, anything can change in the world of Electronic Arts. But when I asked them about that directly, they definitely sort of gave weird, interesting looks when I mentioned microtransactions, hinting that that wasn't something they were pursuing. So
okay.
I'd be surprised. I mean, they're expecting 2 million subscribers at the start.
Yeah.
So they're going for massive appeal. They want an easy business model that's simple to understand.
Yeah, no, that one's such a safe bet for them that when you've got a subscription model, easy money basically. You don't have to entice people into buying stuff once they're already in the game. Whereas with a free to play one, you have to make the game fun. But dangle that carrot. It's like, oh, this could be more fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a very fine line, and it's tough to figure out where that line is, where you're gonna offset enough people to make money, or not upset enough people by saying, you know, oh, you know, you could be better, because some people would be upset because they see that as, you know, buying power in the game.
Right. It's like I'm gonna get ganked by some 14-year-old with an allowance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, outside of MMOs and free-to-play in general, I'm not sure if we can declare Battlefield Heroes a success or non-success. There were some complaints about EA sort of balancing the system where you were really, really incentivized to pay money to in order to compete. But I'm glad they're doing things with their existing brands. Like they're making a browser-based version of Tiger Woods called Tiger Woods PGA Tour Online. They're doing a Need for Speed, not browser-based, but free-to-play racing game that's pretty high quality. You've got to play with at a GDC, using microtransactions for car parts and things like that. And that seems like a decent approach, like using an existing brand and making a sort of not lower quality, but less content, smaller size game for people to jump into.
Yeah, to me, it's almost kind of like looking at, I don't want to say this, this is not exactly what I mean, but it's almost like indie development versus like big time development, where like the big games like WoW and Tor, subscription makes sense because you can get those subscribers. You can make that money. It's easy money. But to kind of start off with kind of a new, interesting idea and kind of take bigger risks with MMOs, the free-to-play is the best way to get your ideas out to people, have them check it out, rather than like, oh, this isn't Star Wars, I don't know what it is, I don't want to pay $50 to try it out. I mean, I think it opens up a lot of more room for risk-taking, which I really like.
Right, and a lot of those games, like they do have less content at launch, but in theory, I mean, if they take off, they want to produce as much content as they can in order to entice you to buy it. So, if a lot of people, you know, glom onto one game and start spending money there, then it would grow and content would come.
Yeah, and let's be honest. I mean, games like Champions and even WoW to some extent, and Star Trek Online, they're charging so much microtransaction anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would start to feel at some point like, you're paying as much as a free-to-play person, and you're playing the subscription on top of it. So then right. You have to look at the two and say, you know, is the quality of this game significantly better to the point that it's worth paying that extra $15 a month?
Right. But I guess with a free game, you don't have to make that call because it didn't cost you anything.
Exactly. And actually, it's surprisingly easy to play most free-to-play games without spending a single dime. Mm-hmm. I mean, and talking with kind of the developers, they say, they expect 80% of the people to never drop a single dime into their game. It's those 20% that are really, really passionate about it that are going to be paying for the game. So, I mean, you don't go into a free-to-play game like closely guarding your wallet, freaking out at every corner that they're trying to steal money from you. I mean, it's totally acceptable and easy to play these games without.
Which you know, makes you kind of think is like the people that the 80% that aren't paying are adding value for the people that are paying, because there's a community there. There are people they can walk around and impress with their fancy paid for gear. So it's kind of a symbiotic relationship there.
Exactly. And you're telling your friends who may become part of that 20% that do pay. And so, yeah, it's just creating kind of the buzz around the game.
Right.
Yeah, maybe 2 years. That's probably a bit much on my part then, but
let's say three.
Let's say three. All right, that's a deal. And we can include Farmville.
Right. Hey guys, out of curiosity, what would it take to get you to play a free-to-play MMO?
For it to be good, I guess. I mean, if they made Warcraft free, I wouldn't have any I wouldn't be like, oh, but it's free now. I don't want anything to do with it. It's just, because they're free, usually assume that they're not very good. It's like anything else. If you have a good product, you can afford to charge for it. People will pay for good, stuff, for quality content, for quality products. So right now, all the good ones, i.e. Warcraft and maybe a couple of others, rightly they ask you to pay. And I don't know how else you sustain the business model, because this is the whole thing with these MMO games, is they constantly have to be maintained and new content. I mean, it's a financially a very high burn rate. So how else do you fund the development? How do you even break even, let alone make profit?
So you definitely need to have a mindset though that if a game is free, it can't have that level of quality.
I mean, I don't think it's impossible. I just think right now that that's definitely where my bias would lead me. And the thing is, the majority of MMOs, whether you pay for them or not, are not very good, so certainly a free one I'm less likely.
Sorry. So Josh, you mentioned a number to me like a couple weeks ago that there's this magic number of subscribers publishers alleged you need to have to be profitable or break even.
Yeah, 35,000 is the number that people have thrown around. I've heard two different publishers mention that.
So that would be like maintaining after, you know, after
yeah,
a long
exactly.
Run.
After it's made kind of a game, I don't know, like Dark Age of Camelot or something that's been out and just to produce enough content to keep people playing is 35,000 is the magic number.
Right. So like for example, Star Wars Galaxies must have 35,000 subscribers, and after it dips below that, they'll pull the plug.
Yeah, allegedly. Or you know, you could kind of, or if you have 30,000, I mean, you're losing so little money. Maybe you consider it like a fan service to keep people, you know, loyal to your company. But yeah, I don't know if that number is actually true, but I've heard it from two different sources, so I don't know.
Sure,
if...
that's good enough for me.
All right, Andy, let's do one more question.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Jeff from Mountain View, California. Back in December, one of you, I think it was Evan, said on the podcast when talking about the Steam holiday sales, that a lot of games that Steam was offering were so cheap that it was worth taking a chance on ones you may never have heard of. Well, that's what I did, and I finally got around to playing a game called Psychonauts. Man, it is fantastic. The graphics are a little dated, but the level design is really creative, and the dialogue is hilarious. It's a perfect example of how run-of-the-mill platformer can become greater than the sum of its parts because of a well-written story and a trippy art style. It's the best $2 I ever spent on Steam, I think. The normal price is $9.99, but that's still a steal in my opinion. I urge all of your listeners to check it out. Anyway, I see that the creator of Psychonauts, Tim Schafer, was also the guy behind the classic game Grim Fandango, which I've also never played. Unfortunately, as far as I can tell, this game isn't available on Steam or GOG or any place else, and people are selling copies for crazy amounts of money on eBay. Do you guys think there's any chance it will ever be re-released? Given the success of games like Tales of Monkey Island, I think there's definitely a market for this. And personally, based on Psychonauts, I'd really like to see other titles that Tim Schafer has written. Anyway, now I just have to make time to play The Chronicles of Riddick, another game I picked up on a whim. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's definitely a chance that it'll be re-released, especially since LucasArts is doing the special editions of Monkey Island now. They just announced the special edition of Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge, at GDC. So, you know, once they get through the Monkey Islands, maybe they'll go for some of their other classic adventure titles at LucasArts. It's too bad that Logan's not on this week. He has announced that he will return next week, with his, fuzzy woodland creatures in tow. But he's slammed right now we're all kind of busy putting out this issue. But yeah, he's the world's biggest fan of Psychonauts. That is one of his favorite games. So he also loves to plug that one whenever he can.
It's really nice seeing these stories pop up. Just people getting back into games and never try. I mean, obviously, you know, incredibly low prices is an excellent, you know, lifting that barrier to entry is fantastic, but I think it's another way that we see digital distribution kind of increasing the life cycle of these games and sort of leading to some of these mini revivals of, you know, I see people jumping back into Ground Control or something, or Total Annihilation, that which came out on Impulse a few weeks ago. And it's just, you know, by not relying on commercials and banner ads to drive people to stores, you know, to get you a new car and pick up a copy off the shelf if there's one still there. You can just click on something and have it instantly for under $10. It's terrific.
Would you rather play Psychonauts for $2 or play Battleship with a girl for 2 minutes? Or for how many minutes? Yeah, I guess it would be about 2 minutes. Quick, which way would you go?
Girl.
Wrong choice.
No.
Yeah, I will say I found Grim Fandango used on Amazon for $30, which is a lot better than eBay. So, I mean, that's not a terrible price to pay because Grim Fandango was a great game. Totally worth $30. But, yeah, it's got to be re-released eventually.
Yeah, and maybe they'll do a remastered version. All right, let's move on to playlists, shall we? Evan, what are you playing?
Oh gosh, Just Cause 2, of course. It's terrific. Everybody should be playing that. Everybody should be posting some cool screenshots, what they're up to. And let's see, Battlefield, Bad Company 2, I guess.
And Josh, what are you playing?
Dragon Age, lots of Dragon Age. I'm about probably 3/4 of the way through my second playthrough, and I'm very excited about it. And I've been sitting in our vent server. I created a channel for single player games. but no one comes down and talks to me while I play Dragon Age.
So I've been let me ask you a question, because I've been thinking about this. If I really, it sounds almost like a dumb question, but I'm not 100% convinced yet. If I've liked all the BioWare games that I've played, like I love Knights of the Old Republic, I love both of the Mass Effect games, am I going to love this just the same, or is it different?
It's definitely different. How did you feel about like Neverwinter Nights?
Never played it.
Okay, do you like the fantasy setting in general, like elks?
That's the thing that puts me off, is I don't mind it, but I think, you know, much like Warcraft, it seems like BioWare have done a good job of kind of carving out their own, you know, spin on that mythology. But it just, part of what I like about Mass Effect is I love the universe. You know, it's hardcore sci-fi, it's out in space, you've got all these cool alien races, there's a great mythology. Once you bring me back down into like elves and dwarves and wizards and magic, it just, I don't know, it just feels so generic, but.
Yeah, I think you said it good. BioWare definitely took the very generic setting, but made a put their own unique twist on it. Like, magic is feared and it's very evil and it's outlawed. Elves are elves, but like half of them are slaves inside the city, enslaved by humans. Dwarves aren't, you know, just drunkards sitting in the stone. You know, it's very political. Backstabbing, assassination. Dragon Age is one of my favorite games of the past in recent memory. It is fantastic. If nothing else, I would try it. Just go through one of the origin stories. It's so deep and so complex, and the ability to change the world around you is incredible.
I heard it was really hard though, and that puts me off.
Play on easy.
Yeah.
I do that with everything these days. I discovered a new term the other day, and I think this applies to me. I'm what is apparently now known as a content tourist. And this is and these are people who, I think, like me, as you get a little bit older, or just, you know, I'm not as good at games as I used to be, or maybe, you know, some people just aren't that good ever. But, you know, you wanna see the whole game, you wanna experience as much of the game as possible. You're less concerned with, you know, an epic challenge as you are just like playing through the story and seeing everything the game has to offer. And apparently that's a content tourist, and that's what I am now. I'm not ashamed to play the game on easy, because it just means I've got the best chance of seeing everything in the game and not getting frustrated.
Right. I think played on easy, I think you'll have a, you know, a relatively easy time of it.
Yeah, I've been playing it on easy actually. Right, yeah. On my second playthrough, because it's just like there's so many games to play. It's not even so much that I don't want the challenge. It's like I already know what's going to happen. I've gone through it. I just want to get through it a second time so I can have all the choices I want made and kind of move on. And easy, you can easily handle. If you want it to be the easiest, play as a mage, because mages are incredibly powerful. There's no balance at all.
Now, Josh, have you dabbled in Awakening at all yet?
I have not, because the first time I played through, like, I didn't get the ending I wanted, and some of my characters left that I didn't want to leave, so I decided I was going to play again this time and get the ending exactly how I wanted it before I jumped into Awakening. So I'm hoping I can finish Dragon Age this weekend and get started on Awakening before next week.
Hey, Gary, what have you been playing?
Well, Mass Effect 2, like I said, I played all the way through and just finished recently and thought it was pretty epic experience. Really enjoyed the final boss battle, even though it was, you know, if you strip it down to a gameplay issue, then it was a really very generic, you know, boss. But, you know, it was pretty awesome the way it was presented, and it felt like a really good ending to the story, and was very happy with it. And that's been mostly my gaming for the last week or so. I've been playing a little bit of Bad Company 2, kind of having a hard time getting into that, not really enjoying it as much as I hoped I would. And I'm going to start getting back into Warcraft. Like I said, maybe as early as this week, I'm going to try and start carving out some time in the evenings to get back up to level 80.
You know, that ending of Mass Effect, like to me, the boss battle, which is, it's a very generic boss fight, when you get down to it, but the presentation and the fact that like that to me was not, it wasn't really the focus of the ending to me. It was like the ending for me was that entire mission, making all the command decisions and you know, having the lives of your crew kind of hang in the balance. That to me was the finale of the game. And the boss battle was more of like the, like in like a horror movie where you've killed the bad guy and then he pops up again and you have to kill him again, you know?
I had a problem with the story just in general. I kind of felt like, you know, usually when you do a sequel, you want to up the stakes, you want to make the story feel bigger. And it felt like it actually almost kind of went backwards a little bit. Like, you know, in the original Mass Effect, it was pretty awesome. You know, you were kind of uncovering the secrets of the universe, and, you know, you were at the center of this big alliance, you know, campaign to save the galaxy. And there was that massive battle on the Citadel at the end, and the, you know, the whole, you know, future of the universe was hung in the balance. And now I kind of feel like I went from that to now I'm working for this kind of shadowy organization, kind of on the fringes of things. And, oh, there are these bad guys that are threatening humans, but the threat's not really that imminent. They're kind of building something. Maybe, I don't know what it is, but it could maybe be dangerous one day, and I got to go deal with it. It's like, you know, I was kind of like going into their lair rather than, you know, them coming to us and threatening us. And I don't know, from a story perspective, it just kind of felt like it didn't have the immediacy. They didn't have the high stakes that the first game had. I don't know if that's just me.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree, up until kind of that last final mission, and that last final mission totally redeemed it for me, where you're like on the ship and every one of your crew members is on the verge of dying, and you have to do everything you can to protect them, and I like that.
I think we did a pretty good job of not spoiling anything in that. That was nice. So, Eric, what have you been playing?
Couple things. Josh kind of inspired me from across the hall to start playing Dragon Age again. And I am actually going through it on hard now, which is ridiculous. I don't think there is any way I could possibly be getting through it if I hadn't chosen to play a mage this time, because mages are very, very powerful.
So mage is what I want to do if I want the easiest possible time, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so, yeah. So I'm having fun with that, but then 2 days ago, a game called Settlers 7 came out, and I have not played any of the previous six, but this game is awesome. I am having so it's very similar to Dawn of Discovery, which we've discussed earlier on this podcast.
Same developer,
Blue Byte. It's essentially an economy management game with vague real-time strategy in there. It's all about managing your flow of resources and how you're going to spend those resources to win the game. And the one thing they did with Settler 7 is they added multiplayer. And I got in one heck of a match last night. We had a lot of fun. So I'm really excited for some of these other guys in the office to load it up so we can play together.
I had no idea they were still making Settlers games. I mean, I remember those from back in the day, like the original Settlers, but I had no idea that franchise was still going.
Yeah, apparently it was originally supposed to be called Surf City, but they got sued by Maxis. but yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with that game. And it has a castle builder, because like the very base of your whole economy, it's from your castle. And you can build utterly, utterly ridiculous-looking castles. My castle currently has like 146 flags sticking out of it, so it just kind of moves in the wind. It's a lot of fun.
Take that, six flags.
That's right.
More fun.
Yeah, it should be noted though that does come with the dreaded Ubisoft always on connectivity DRM.
That is true.
Have you been kicked out of any games yet?
You know, me and Josh seem to have a pretty stable internet connection, because I've had zero problems with it.
Even Jeff Green at EA has been tweeting about this again recently, saying that he's been trying to play Command & Conquer 4, and has had a couple of games go in the toilet because his connection hiccuped, and it was enough for the DRM to boot him out of the game.
And that's an EA game, so he's...
Yeah,
he's,
and when people that are paid to be kind of, you know, a mouthpiece of the company are saying this sucks, yeah, then that's a certain degree of problem for sure.
He's peeing where he lives.
Yes.
But, he's and inside Andy, how about you? Skin.
Well, when I'm not getting killed by 40 Mike grenades in Battlefield Bad Company 2, I'm actually playing the game. But it's becoming more and more of a problem to stay alive when you're not in a vehicle, because everybody is getting deadly with their 40 millimeters.
So real quick balancing question about Bad Company 2, Andy.
Yeah.
If you play a lot of Rush, I play a lot of Rush. It's a nice mode.
I like Rush.
So, there are these little things called MCOM stations, these little computers that are your objective. You have to walk up to them and set a bomb on them, and you have to defend it until it explodes. but in some situations you can just level the building that they're sitting in.
Yeah, you can assist with that destruction with a tank or something, and you can just blow up the place.
Yes, and does that seem like it's annoying to you? Because I feel like instead of just attacking the objective itself, people can just shoot at the building with tank rounds and rockets, and it'll fall down, and they'll win.
I haven't actually seen that happen more than maybe once or twice. But I have a feeling, like, I always wonder why no one is concentrating their fire at the building. Like, it's always a question of, well, who's got the helicopter or the tank? Sorry, because usually the helicopters are on defense only, except in a few of them. Why aren't they just shooting the building out or, like, going on suicide missions over and over until, you know, they just destroy the building? Because usually what they do is they try and, the tanks usually stay back and try and take shots at actual people when they should just be going and doing suicide runs at the building.
Cool. I'm just curious what kind of experience people are having with that. What's your preferred build right now?
I've gotten a lot of unlocks with the medic, so I usually do the... I'm having trouble finding the right primary weapon, though. I'm still doing the M249.
M60 is the one all medics use that are the top of the leaderboards, I guess.
I'm not quite at that part yet of unlocking it. So that I've looked at all the specs. Because you tweeted that awesome gun matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that, and the M60 did look like the most effective weapon for the medic class. So, yeah. Right now, I'm still using the M249.
Cool.
So yeah, I guess for myself, I've been playing some more of the StarCraft 2 beta. I guess it's a good testament to their matchmaking system that even with just the players in the beta, I'm like 50-50 online. Although I tend to either, there are very few close games, I'd say. I either get absolutely thumped or beat the crap out of people probably 2/3 out of the time. And the rest of the time, the last third, I get a good game out of it. But I'm sure that once there are more people in there, especially once the game launches, the matchmaking is pretty promising, really.
So what's your typical strategy?
I have been trying to make myself into a decent Zerg player. And you know, not going all that well. I kind of abhor rushing. I try it once in a while to shake things up. But, I want to play for more than 3 to 5 minutes.
There's more to playing the Zerg than just rushing, though, isn't there?
There is, but it is a big part of the Zerg strategy.
I mean, to the point where it became synonymous. Oh, you Zerged me, you know? I mean, that's pretty much, that's kind of a damning indictment of the whole strategy, but there's definitely more to it than that. Otherwise, it would be a boring class.
Right. So you can potentially end a game in the first, 3 to 5 minutes with a really early rush. I hate doing that. Sometimes if I get rushed in the first 3 to 5 minutes and lose in the next game, I will take out my rage by rushing the next guy I play. I generally try to drag out the games to, 15 to 20 minutes and get some higher level stuff in there. And my ideal scenario is where I level up to the point where I can get some brood lords, which are the very powerful air to ground, units. But oftentimes by the time you do that, unless you've just been, keeping the pressure on the other guy and keeping him off balance, he's got a lot of anti-air. So it's harder to win that way. But I try to do it. And
I'm trying to remember, does StarCraft have an equivalent of like the engineer rush from CNC where if the other player doesn't defend against you, you can go in with literally like a couple of units and totally f*** up all his shit?
No, it does not have an engineer rush. It does have, as the Terrans, you do have the ghost where you can nuke them, but that's much later in the game. I mean, in CNC, you could crank out engineers and take over their entire base in the first few minutes.
Well, I've seen this a couple times. It's not really along the same lines, but it's an interesting tactic where the Terrans can convert their command center into some sort of... They basically put a gun on top of it.
Right.
And they fly that as early as possible over the enemy base, land it, and just open fire with their basic units.
Well, they can't fly and after they've built that turret, so they have to fly it over and then build the turret.
I see.
So they have to defend it while they're building the turret.
That's tough.
But that is a vicious tactic. There are a lot of those really, really evil little things they can pull, people can pull, and like I'm still surprised sometimes by by some new tactics after playing, you know, 50 or 60 games. So it's ever evolving. And of course I jumped into Just Cause 2 last night, and I'll probably be in there tonight as well. So
Did you play any CNC4 yet?
I did. I did the review. And I've jumped in a few times to play, you know, against people since then. You know, it's not my favorite thing. It's an okay game. It's, you know, it's a good time, but it's not in the same league as the other RTSs that have come out in the last month. It's not as interesting as SubCom 2. It's not, Dawn of War 2 Chaos Rising is really a lot of fun. Although not, traditional RTS in the way that, SubCom is. I guess neither is CNC. CNC is closer to World in Conflict, where it's all about capture points. It's all about a mobile. You don't have a base. There's no base building. You have a kind of a main mobile unit that you can deploy and crank out units for free. There's no resourcing. It's a very different game, and you know it's fun. I personally wouldn't pick it up for $50. I would wait until it got down to 30 or.
Yeah, I'm just gonna hold out for StarCraft 2 at this point, I think.
Yeah, I of the games available right now, it's my third choice of those three games I just mentioned. So. We do have another thing to announce, that we are looking for a new intern. Not that we have anything against Eric, but he can't stay with us forever. So we're looking for some willing and able volunteers to come and help us out at the PC Gamer offices in alternately sunny and foggy South San Francisco. What we're looking for specifically are people who love games, have an interest in writing, and can receive college credit for an internship. Logan says we want a soft woodland intern. I don't know what that means specifically, but that will weigh heavily on your resume if you are soft and woodland.
Yeah, put that as a bullet point.
Right, but yeah, you do need to be able to receive college course credit for an internship. If you're interested, please email us a writing sample and a little bit about yourself to editor@pcgamer.com, and we will give you due consideration and finally make our selection, possibly in reality show format.
I hope so.
Yeah. And I guess to further wrap up the show, we should remind you to send us more questions, more of your excellent questions. We had some good ones this week. I think everyone enjoyed all the questions.
Hey, can I plug a couple of things real quick before we go?
Of course.
I want to plug a couple. If you have diverse interests as I do, if you like things like, for example, squirrels and bacon. Then I've got a couple of blogs that you definitely want to check out. My girlfriend has started up a blog recently called squirrely.net. And you should check that out if you're interested in squirrels. She posts all kinds of interesting squirrel related things. And Logan Decker's a huge fan of that. So if you want to be
and
like
Logan.
Yeah, and even a guest editor on that site. It's almost got an interesting PC gamer link. So you should check out squirrely.net if you're interested in that. And also, I recently started a blog called Bacon Aficionado, which is all about bacon and bacon-related things. If you like bacon, and who doesn't, you should check out bacon-aficionado.com. And we also have a Facebook fan page that you should check out. So that's it, really. Those are my two little plugs for this week. And I think if you check them out, you'll find them both very rewarding ways.
But don't confuse them. You don't want to play with the bacon and eat the squirrels.
That's, no.
That would
Elvis
be, that
did
would
that, be I think.
Did he? And look how that worked out for him.
Yeah, it didn't work out too great for him. But they're both fine. Oh, and also, I'm trying to get over 1,000 Twitter followers. I'm at like 900 and something. It's really annoying me. I'm like stuck at like right under 1,000 gamer points on my Xbox, and I'm stuck right under 1,000 Twitter followers, and both are pissing me off. So if you want to help me boost my Twitter thing, you should go to you should follow me. I'm G Witter. And that's it, really. This is a bit shameless, so I'm just going to stop now.
Yeah, why not? All right, so send us some questions at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com in MP3 format, or call the number which Andy remembers.
1-877-404-1337. That's 877-404-1337, extension 724 on that line.
And also be sure to check out PCGamer.com to subscribe to the magazine. And we're also blogging now on PCGamer.co.uk with our PC Gamer UK compatriots. So check that out. All right, so for all of us here at PC Gamer, we will see you next week.